now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. We need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, the cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have to have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Well, the year is drawing to a close, so for the final two shows this year, I thought, let's focus on the best of the Cocktail Nation. So let's replay some of my favourite interviews from the year. We talked to James Spencer about his book about Julie London, James M. Krause about his blog about classic cars, Kathy Rudolph about her book on Paul Lynde, Jeff Chenault about his book on the Kahiki, and Carrie Handler on her new project, which was revealed this year about the Tiki Educational Unit called Poly High. Got some cool tunes to spin as well. Of course, since it's all about the best, let's kick off with Frank Sinatra, and the best is yet to come on the Cocktail Nation.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started into hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. Best is yet to come, and babe, won't that be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. And wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? Best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drain the cup dry. Wait till your charms are ripe for these arms to surround. You think you've flown before, but baby, you ain't left the ground. Wait till you're locked in my embrace. Wait till I draw you near. Wait till you see that sunshine place. Ain't nothing like it here. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come, come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. And you're gonna be mine.
This is the Cocktail Nation, thanks to Ultraswank.net.
Point the way, what will it be?
Cocktail Nation Lounge Leader Kip Cooper and Bob Thompson, the best thing for you on our Best Interviews show this week. James Spencer has written a book all about Julie London. It's called Lady Liberty. And we spoke about this amazing, amazing woman. You know, the funny thing about Julie London, Jim, is that we all know her music, but we don't necessarily know a lot about her life.
That's exactly it, Coop. And, you know, what's fascinating, too, is she was such an influential singer in the cool jazz realm. She did over 30 albums. You know, many artists have looked to her for their inspiration and style. Especially there was a whole in England in the 80s and 90s, you know, like Marnie Wilson recorded Cry Me a River and Sade. A lot of those artists look back to her. And what I find fascinating is, you know, she passed away and there was like not one book on her, not anything. And wow. I just couldn't believe that. And, you know, I had, I was fortunate, you know, being a cool jazz pianist and vocalist myself, to have the opportunity to perform with players that had worked with Julie, specifically Al Viola, who was Julie's guitarist on many of the albums, most notably her second album in 56 called Lonely Girl, which was just Julie and guitar, you know, and Al. And then I very briefly met Julie and Bobby Troup in 1995. At their home in Encino right before she got her stroke, because she Julie came down with a stroke in 95 and deteriorated after that. You know,
was she, what sort of person did the musicians say she was, you know, when they talked about her personally?
Sure. You know, what was the interesting thing is Julie was kind of, you know, first and foremost, this is what was very interesting about Julie. She came from a very sad upbringing. Her parents were vaudeville performers in Santa Rosa, California, back in, you know, she was born 1920s. And she was born kind of into, you know, a very poor family. She was an only child. So, you know, her really biggest thing she wanted out of life was to have a big family. And what happened is she, you know, even despite the music, I mean, she loved singing. She was, you know, she grew up, you know, Billie Holiday was one of her favorites. And, you know, she always sang. She was absolutely gorgeous. So, you know, obviously, you know, movies picked her up very quickly. And a lot of people don't know she was discovered by Susan Carroll, who was Alan Ladd's wife. Mm-hmm. Discovered her when she was working as an elevator operator back in the day. And anyway, so to go back, though, is so, you know, her thing was she loved intimate clubs and she loved the recording process, but she was absolutely terrified of performing in large venues, like, you know, and she sold out Vegas. She was, in fact, you know, and this is interesting, in the 50s she was one of the highest paid you know, women entertainers in on the Vegas circuit.
The best of the best on the Cocktail Nation.
I'm feeling mighty lonesome, haven't slept a wink. I walk the floor and watch the door, and in between I drink black coffee. Love's a hand-me-down broom. I'll never know a Sunday in this weekday room. I'm talking to the shadows, 1 o'clock to four. And Lord, how slow the moments go when all I do is pour black coffee. Since the blues caught my eye, my Sunday dreams to try. Now a man is born to go a-loving. A woman's born to weep and fret, to stay home and tend her oven and drown her past regrets in coffee and cigarettes. I'm mooning all the morning, mourning all the night, and in between it's nicotine and not much heart to fight. Black coffee, feeling low as the ground. It's driving me crazy, this waiting for my baby to maybe come around, to maybe come around. Pour me black coffee and I'll come.
Hello, baby.
The Cocktail Nation. largely to Coop Cooper, all thanks to ultraswag.net, Larry Gulb. And suddenly it's spring. James M. Krause is a man I spoke to last year about his bachelor pad cooking book, and it's just amazing. Do check it out if you get a chance. Now, I spoke to him about his other project this year, which is his Auto Universum blog, and it's an amazing blog all about classic cars and some real desirable wheels in there.
Oh yeah, well, what I did from the start was I wanted to focus on my favorite era, which is mostly the 1960s, in, as you know, all matters, the food, the cars, the design, the architecture, the whole bit. So I occasionally will go back to the 50s, a little bit into the early 70s, but mostly the 60s based. And one of the other things that separates it from most of the automotive sites out there is that I concentrate on the entire spectrum, from the tiniest Fiats and NSUs to Ferraris and whatnot, where most sites will concentrate on, you know, high-powered cars, expensive cars. I kind of treat them all equally.
Yeah.
As long as they're visually or technically interesting. The 60s, for me, was kind of a highlight. Not only was there a big variety of cars, you still had, and nowadays, cars, or if they're small or medium-sized, they're front-wheel drive. If they're big, they're rear drive. Mm. But back then, there was front engine, front drive, rear engine, rear drive, water-cooled, air-cooled. They were just starting to sell rotary-powered cars, and Chrysler built 50 turbine-powered cars that sounded like a jet aircraft, and put them in the hands of families to test out over a three-year period. So there was all kinds of diversity going on in engineering, and it was the last time that cars were thought of as purely kind of a fun thing. Not until the very late 60s did anybody care about what came out of the exhaust pipe or anything safety involved. Safety belts even didn't come out until the late 60s. You just jump in the car and you take off. It was a whole different thing back then. I was just thinking about this the other day. You know, there's talk that the younger kids aren't as enthused about automobiles and automobile ownership as we were. And I got to thinking, stuff like that is formed when you're really young. Mm. And when I was young, you know, the family would just pile into the car and would take off. And the cars, like you're saying, were very sleek and stylish. But the kids that grew up in the last decade or so, they grew up in cars that frankly weren't very attractive, you know, big clunky SUVs and whatnot. And they didn't just jump into the car and go. Their parents had to strap them into these little seats, often facing the wrong direction. It's like being in a little prison. Instead of playing around in the back seat, climbing all over the place.
The best of the best on the Cocktail Nation.
So you try hard to be good and do the things you should. You give up everything that you enjoy. But if you slip a bit and your heart says this is it, that's a necessary evil, my boy. All your friends say you're a fool and you won't break any rules with all the saintly virtues you employ. Fling makes your soul begin to sing. That's a necessary evil, my boy. Well, a man sometimes has to sip of the grape, cast his eye on a lovely shape, then sometime a way to desire. If a man says he don't, he's not a man, he's a liar. So don't let yourself be sad if what looks good is bad. Reach out, accept the things that bring you joy. And when you feel inclined, it'll help to keep in mind that's a necessary evil, my boy. Well, a man sometimes has to sip of the grape, cast his eye on our lovely shape. Then sometime, a way to desire. If a man says he don't, he's not a man, he's a liar. So don't let yourself be sad if what looks good is bad. Reach out, accept the things that bring you joy. And when you feel inclined, it'll help to keep in mind that's a necessary evil, my boy. Grape, cast his eye on a lovely shape. Then sometime, a way to desire. If a man says he don't, he's not a man, he's a liar. So don't let yourself be sad if what looks good is bad. Reach out, accept the things that bring you joy. A man has got to live. Even steel is made to give. That's a necessary evil. A necessary evil, my boy.
The Cocktail Nation.
Hey, it's Sonny from Nutty, and you're listening to a track from our new CD entitled Jet Set of Jazz, The Persuasive Sound of Nutty.
Kiss the sky. Purple haze all around. Don't know if I'm coming up or coming down. Am I happy or in misery? Whatever it is, that chick put a spell on me. night. You've got me blowing my mind. Is it tomorrow or just...
Cocktail Nation, all thanks to ultraswank.net, lounge leader Coop Cooper and Nutty with Purple Panther. And on the show this year, we spoke to Kathy Rudolph, who's written a book all about the amazing comedian Paul Lynde. Here's a bit of it. The great comedian and actor, of course, one of the stars of Bewitched as well. What an amazing man. Paul Lynde, a biography, his life, his love, and his laughter by Kathy Rudolph. She joins me on the line. Kathy, this is an incredible story. Tell us how it happened.
Yes, when I was 17 years old, I had two dreams in my life. One was to be an author, and the other was to meet who I thought was the funniest and most hilarious man I ever saw on television. That was Paul Lynde. And as a Smitten fan, I was doing research on him in the Levittown Public Library, which is located on Long Island in New York, where I grew up. And as I was doing research on Paul Lynde, I found a book of stars, Broadway stars, looked like a resume, said Paul Lynde's business manager's phone number. I went home, I asked my parents if I could call California. That was a long distance call.
Yeah.
And my parents said, well, make it person to person, because he's probably not going to answer the phone and it won't cost much. So I dialed the phone, and lo and behold, Paul Lynde himself answered the phone. He couldn't believe a fan had found his home telephone number. He just said, oh my goodness, you know, who is this girl calling me? But we knew so much in chatting, or I knew so much, I should say. He didn't hang up, and he listened. And suddenly I was, you know, blurting out, you know, how's Donnie and Marie Osmond? How's your dog? And he was very fond of his dog. So that kind of connected us. And I asked him if he would meet me in New York. And first he said, no way. And I said, oh, you know, I know you come to New York a lot. And he kept saying, oh, I can't come. I'd have to do this for everyone. Well, lo and behold, I said the magic words, I'll have my father take me.
Yeah.
There was the first moment of silence. And he said, okay, I'll meet you. I'll be in New York in 2 weeks. Come and meet me for 5 minutes only. Autograph and a picture. We met, and that five-minute meeting turned out to be over 2 hours and the beginning of a wonderful friendship until he died in 82.
And you kept in contact with him year after year after year for the rest of the time?
Oh, yes. He called me every Christmas. I saw him over a dozen times in the course of his life. He came to my a nearby hometown and did the Paul Lynde show, the tour, not his television show, where he was a one-man show. Basically, Paul Lynde. He had some singers, Mimi Hines and Roz Clark, I believe. And he sang Kids, and he sang it to me, introduced me to the audience, and he did the great show. He had the whole place laughing. And I've been to Virginia with him. I went dancing with him. I met him in Toronto. We had dinner after the shows. We hung out for a few days there. I've been to his home in California. The last time I saw him was in Canada, Toronto, about 5 months before he passed away. That was the last time we were together. And as I was saying goodbye to him, he had this fear. Well, he lost his parents and his brother within 3 months of each other when he was under 30 years old, and that devastated him. So whenever he said goodbye, he'd say, don't say goodbye, just say, I'll see you soon. And I accidentally said, goodbye, Paul. And then he said, no, don't say that. And that ended up being the last time I saw him, unfortunately.
The best of the best on the Cocktail Nation.
Bewitched, bewitched, you've got me in your spell. Bewitched, bewitched, you know your craft so well. Before I knew what you were doing, I looked in your eyes. That brand of woo that you've been brewing took me by surprise.
bewitched, bewitched. One thing is for sure, that stuff you pitch just hasn't got a cure. My heart was under lock and key, somehow it got unhitched. I never thought my heart could be had, but now I'm caught and I'm kinda glad to be bewitched, bewitched.
The Cocktail Nation. Thank you.
The Cocktail Nation with Coop Cooper, our best of interviews show for 2014, and Aaron Dahl with Generation Y. Jeff Chenault wrote a book all about the Kahiki restaurant, and we caught up with him about this amazing place, which sadly isn't with us anymore. His latest book called Kahiki Supper Club, a Polynesian paradise in Columbus. Of course, the Kahiki, sadly no more, but certainly a focal point for the tiki community across the globe, and such an iconic figure in the tiki world. Jeff, I suppose when you think about it, it's kind of odd to write a book about a restaurant, really, isn't
it? Yeah, there's not too many, actually, out there. I mean, there is, like, a book on the Stork Club and a few other restaurants, but, yeah, nothing of just a Polynesian restaurant. I think this is a first, so I'm kind of excited about it.
Pretty amazing thing when you think about it. Just the actual cost of this restaurant. It would equate to around about $7 million today.
Yeah, it would definitely cost a lot, because in 1960 it cost $1 million, so.
That's incredible. Tell us a little bit about your story when it comes to writing this book, because I know that the Kahiki is really held up within the tiki community being a central place.
Yeah, especially Columbus. It has a huge Kahiki fan base, because, I mean, that was the place to go. I mean, people went there for, their proms and for dances and for private parties. And, I mean, that was the go-to place. If you wanted to go somewhere, have a really good time, have fun, and escape, the Kahiki was it.
But it seemed like it almost kind of didn't happen to start off with. You know, there was disaster in the burning down of a first premises, and it just kind of seemed like it was
right.
Fortunate
it all
happened.
Built literally out of the ashes of the grass skirt. You know, I mean, the grass skirt was like the Kahiki's testing grounds.
Yeah.
And that's where they invented a lot of the drinks and were experimenting with the food menu and coming up with ideas, you know. And then it unfortunately burned down on Bill's birthday, believe it or not. What was going on there, I don't know. But, you know, they rebuilt, and they rebuilt in a big way.
Yeah, it's such a... I think one of the most interesting things about the Kahiki is its physical stature. I mean, it looked like a giant Polynesian boat. I mean, you just don't see that sort of... you just don't see that sort of architecture around these days. I mean,
pretty
impressive.
Beautiful. I mean, that was the first thing you noticed as you drove down East Broad Street is the architecture. You're like, wow, what is that jutting out, you know?
I sort of got the impression that Bill kind of feel in two minds about selling the joint. You know, it seemed like, at the time, it seemed like a good idea, but then maybe it wasn't such a good idea shortly afterwards.
Yeah, he was really hesitant to sell it. He really was, you know, because it was his baby and Lee Henry's, and, you know, I think push came to shove, he finally said okay, you know, and you know, I think it was about 78 is when they actually signed it over to another guy named Mitch Boich, who had it for a little while before he ended up leasing it and then ultimately selling it to Michael Chow.
The best of the best on the Cocktail Nation. Thank you.
the Cocktail Nation lounge leader, Coop Cooper, and Carrie Handler is a gal who used to write for Tiki Magazine. And she thought to herself, you know what? We need an educational arm of Tiki. So she put together a little thing called Poly High.
Poly High is, I'll have to backtrack just a little bit. For 9 years, I was with Tiki Magazine. I was the assistant editor and writer and sometime photographer for Tiki Magazine for the first 9 years. And another Tiki Magazine writer, Matthew Rios, and I decided that when Tiki Magazine was sold last August, we still wanted to be able to write and do something in the Tiki world, and we wanted to do something that would not be competitive at all with Tiki Magazine, because we wanted to see it continue to flourish with the new owner and the new writers who are going to be on it. But we wanted to still be able to write and contribute. And we thought to ourselves, well, what's missing from the Tiki scene in terms of publishing? What hasn't been done yet?
Yeah.
And we realized that there was a real need for a hardbound book, a sort of commemorative book of what happened. There's so many things that go on in Tiki, all the events and things like that that happen, the art shows. But there was really something, a needed sort of a compilation at the end of the year. And then we thought, well, how can we make this fun? And we decided to come up with this is going to be upset people who think it's real, but it's an imaginary school called Poly High, PolyHai. And so, like Polytech or something, but it's Poly High. And it's it's a school, an online school on Facebook, where we teach people higher Tiki education and learning. And we have events. We just put on our first event with Sam Kirsten a few weeks ago. He brought his Tiki Pop in Paris exhibit to the Purple Orchid Tiki Bar in El Segundo, California, so people who couldn't go to Paris and see it could see his slideshow. It was a one-time thing that he did for us, and it was sold out within 36 hours. And we did that, and then we decided also once we announced that we were a school and that we began to get massive amounts of likes on Facebook from people who knew us from Tiki Magazine and really liking the stories that we were writing on Poly High and the kind of spirit that we had there, they said, well, if this is a school, we should have a yearbook. And so it was really the fans who inspired us to do a yearbook. And that's when we came up with Poly High, the yearbook. And now it's an annual yearbook. We just put out our first one. And it's actually being distributed at Tiki Oasis later this week down in San Diego, California. And it has class photos. It has new stories of the year. It has custom craft cocktails by people like Jeff Berry and Martin Kate and Lori Snyder, who I know you know. And it's a heck of a lot of fun and has a surprise ending, too, in it. So that's kind of what we've been doing. It's educational. And it's fun, and it comes out with the annual school yearbook.
I love the sound of it. You know, if anything, if you play your cards right, there's a good chance you could get some sort of government grants or something like that that you might be able to, you know, work it into a high school curriculum or something like that, you know. But for
that's
sure,
a brilliant idea.
You know what would happen? You would probably get some religious groups up in arms saying that you're worshipping Tiki gods, and therefore it's part of the religious curriculum, and therefore that doesn't mesh with the Constitution. So you might have some issues.
You're absolutely right. Yes, I've never thought about getting a grant for any of this stuff, and we just do it for the love, the absolute love and the fun of it. As you well know, the Tiki community are such a cool group of people, so creative, that it's fun to be able to do something just for the love of it and to give back. And I'm really looking forward to it. Like I said, I have been away in Hong Kong and Tokyo for the last few weeks, but Matthew, my co-founder and partner, and we call him the co-principal, we're both co-principals at Poly High, he is the one who got the delivery of the yearbooks, and he just sent me a message when I was in Hong Kong just saying they look fantastic. I can't wait for people to see the start of this and what they think is going to happen with this. And we're going to continue to do more events.
Carrie Handler, they're talking about the educational institution that is Poly High. Next week, we are checking out some of the best musical releases of the year on the Cocktail Nation. It'll be our final show. We'll keep you up to date, of course, with the best of shows continuing right through to January. But I'm going to leave you right now with Ada Lee and A Night in Tunisia. Stay hip.
The moon is the same moon above you, aglow with its cool evening light, but shining at night in Tunisia never does shine so bright. The stars are aglow in heaven, but only the wise understand that shining at night in Tunisia, they guide you through the desert sand. Words fail to tell a tale too exotic to be told. Each night's a deeper night in a world ages old. The cares of the day seem to vanish. The ending of day brings release. Each wonderful night in Tunisia, the nights are filled with peace. Wonderful night in Tunisia, where the nights are filled with peace, where the nights.